Evacuate, evacuate, evacuate. The storm will kill you.
Well, that's a clear message.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight. I got the feeling that something ain't right. I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Yep.
Yes, I'm stuck in the middle.
From the Pacifica Radio Network in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in L.A., in Oregon on 91.7 FM KYAQ, on the Central Coast at 106.7 FM Queso in Cottage Grove, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania on 93 FM WLRI News Radio, in Hawaii on 88.5 FM KAKU, the voice of Maui, in Columbus, Ohio on WGRN 94.1 FM, the Green Renaissance Network, in Palinville, New York on 102.9 FM WLPP, and in Minneapolis, St. Paul on AM 950 KTNF, the progressive voice of Minnesota. We're also streaming on the intertubes at the Progressive Voices Channel, Netroots Radio, Indie Media Weekly, FYI Nation, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, GDPR, Revolution 99, Detour Talk, Radio Monterey, and Radio Sputnik, amongst others. Blanketing Planet Earth, which could use a blanket right around now. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me, from bradblog.com. Thank you for joining us today. You don't usually hear me say this, but please, please pay attention to the wise words. Yes, the wise words. Like I said, you don't normally hear me say this. The wise words of Florida Governor Rick Scott today, as the Category 4 Hurricane Matthew, which may be turning into Category 5 again, is now gunning straight towards Florida's East Coast.
If you're watching and you're in an evacuation area, get out. Don't take a chance. Time is running out. This is clearly going to either have a direct hit or come right along our coast, and we're going to have hurricane force winds. There are no excuses. You need to leave. Evacuate, evacuate, evacuate. This is serious. The storm will kill you. Time is running out. We don't have that much time left. Forecasts project 5 to 9 feet. Now, this is 5 to 9 feet above where you're standing. Stop and think about that. 5 to 9 feet. That doesn't include the waves on top of that. Do not surf. Do not go on the beach. This will kill you. These are all projections. It could be much worse. Time is running out. If you're on the East Coast, you will lose power. You are going to lose power. Do not believe you're not going to lose power. You are going to lose power. Millions will lose power, possibly for a long period of time.
That was Florida Governor Rick Scott today urging people to get out while they still can, because this storm will kill you. President Barack Obama echoed those sentiments. He declared a federal emergency and offered his own warning today from the White House.
I want to emphasize to the public, this is a serious storm. It has already hit Haiti with devastating effect. It is now in the process of moving through the Bahamas. Because it's not going to be hitting enough land, it is going to be building strength on its way to Florida. We anticipate that it will already begin to have significant effect in Florida, and then has the potential to strengthen and move on up the coast during the course of the day.
That was the president at the White House today. Hurricane Matthew was upgraded earlier today to a Category 4 storm as it tracks closer to the U.S. coast. And as I said, as we go to air, the Weather Channel is now reporting that this monster storm continues to strengthen, could become a Category 5 once again. In addition to Florida Governor Scott's warning, other governors from Georgia, North Carolina, and South Carolina have now declared states of emergency. Millions of people are being urged to head to safer ground as the most powerful storm to threaten the Atlantic coast in more than a decade continues its path to the northwest towards the U.S. at about 12 miles per hour. It's a slow-moving storm. That's disturbing as well because that means a lot of rainfall, and it's currently said to be packing wind gusts, 125-mile-per-hour winds with higher gusts. Some 8 million Florida residents are scrambling to make last-minute prep. Hurricane Matthew could be making landfall just north of West Palm Beach, Florida, sometime early Friday morning around 2 a.m. It could be the strongest storm to hit the U.S. in more than a decade if it makes landfall. Up to 15 inches of rain may fall in some areas. And you heard Governor Scott speak about that storm surge up to 8 feet expected along the coast from central Florida to Georgia, according to the National Hurricane Center. Notably here, no other Atlantic storm on record has packed these kind of powerful winds for such a prolonged period of time. It is the longest-lived Category 4 or 5 in the Eastern Caribbean, where Matthew has already claimed more than 100 lives as we go to air in the islands where it has already struck, and that death toll is expected to rise. Here to talk about this and frankly, much more, because this is a story that, once again, the corporate media does not seem to connect the dots, the climate dots. I hope we will do exactly that. Joining us to do that is Paul Douglas, a Minnesota broadcast meteorologist veteran on television and radio for more than 40 years. Some of our listeners may be familiar with Paul. Some of our listeners specifically up on our affiliate AM 950 KTNF up in Minneapolis, St. Paul. He is founder and senior meteorologist at Aris Weather, providing tailored weather services for businesses and media outlets. And he writes a daily weather and climate column for the Minneapolis Star Tribune and serves on the Climate Science Rapid Response Team, delivering highly accurate science information to media and government representatives, at least those that want to hear it. He is now also the co-author of the new book, Caring for Creation, The Evangelical's Guide to Climate Change and a Healthy Environment, which he wrote with minister, coal miner's son, and head of the Evangelical Environmental Network, and a previous guest on this show, Reverend Mitch Hethcox. Paul Douglas, welcome back to the broadcast, sir.
It's great to be with you, Brad. I wish it was under different circumstances, but always good chatting with you.
Yeah, and with you, and I realize you're on the roll today. Hopefully your cell phone holds out here. We saw yet another enormous super typhoon in the Pacific this week, Super Typhoon Chaba. Even as Hurricane Matthew in the Atlantic slammed Haiti and Cuba, now the Bahamas, it's on target for Florida, South Carolina, other states up the eastern seaboard. What is, from your perspective, the latest on Matthew, and is it as devastating as it now appears to be? What are you expecting from this storm as of now? What are you most concerned about?
Well, I'm most concerned about an extended swath of storm surge damage, Brad. Usually hurricanes hit the coast, and there's an area about 50 to 150 miles wide that suffers severe damage from the pounding waves and the storm surge, which is this rapid rise in water. In this case, again, you know, 5, 7, 9 feet above the normal tides. And this is what kills people. It's not the winds. It's not even as much the inland rain. It's the storm surge that can cut off escape routes. And unless you're up second, third, fourth floor of a well-constructed hotel or office building, you can be swept away by the storm surge. And because Matthew is going to kind of hug the coast, it's going to grind its way right up the coast, past Daytona, past Cape Canaveral, which I expect to be mostly submerged by tomorrow morning, up towards Jacksonville. It could literally be a Category 3 once it reaches Savannah, Hilton Head, and Charleston. So there's going to be a long stretch of coastline that is impacted by this storm surge because much of the circulation, Brad, is going to remain out over water. So it isn't going to fizzle the way a normal hurricane, once it comes inland, it rapidly weakens. It starves for moisture, and so it begins to weaken. But in this case, the circulation is going to remain over the warm Gulf Stream water. And this storm strengthened from a tropical storm to a Category 5 in 36 hours. And that's a testament to the water temperatures in the Caribbean, which are running several degrees above average. So when people say, well, you know, who cares about a few degrees? Well, you know, it's the old weather on steroids analogy. We are supersizing a lot of these storms. It's been happening in the Pacific for years. You know, Typhoon Haiyan, off the scale, could really technically a Category 6 hurricane a couple of years ago that decimated the Philippines.
Is there such a thing? Is there such
92% of the 92% of the warming is going into the oceans. And as a result, you know, we increase the potential for these turbocharged hurricanes.
You say, Paul Douglas, you say technically a Category 6. Is there such a thing as a Category 6? Is there an upper limit on these storms?
Well, today, as we sit here today, there is no Category 6. But if you were to continue the scale and look at a typhoon like Haiyan, where the sustained winds were 210, 220, you could make an argument with a straight face that it wasn't a Category 5. It was something more than a Category 5. If you look at the physics, hurricanes get their strength from warm ocean water. The warmer the water, the greater the upper limit for what the winds can reach, especially if the upper level winds are light and conditions are ripe for strengthening. But you could, in theory, have a hurricane, a hypercane, with sustained winds of 250, 275. We haven't seen that. Haiyan is the closest we've come recently to getting that intensity. But if you believe some of the climate scientists, you know, we may be entering an era of these turbocharged, supersized hurricanes and typhoons.
I've never heard that word, hypercane. That's disturbing in and of itself. Paul, you mentioned the unusual path here that Matthew is taking, sort of running up the coast instead of slamming straight into the land. So it's that sort of staying on the water that is going to allow it to increase the amount of sea level storm surge that's coming in because it's staying over the warm waters as it moves north up the coast?
Yes, Brad, exactly. It's paralleling the coast, which means that it won't weaken nearly as rapidly as a typical hurricane moving inland. So I think it's going to hit as a Category 5 for a strong 4 or a weak Category 5, sustained winds around 150, 155, very close to West Palm Beach, very close to Mr. Trump's Mar-a-Lago hotel. So that'll be interesting to see if there are impacts there. But then it's going to weaken gradually to a Category 4 during the day tomorrow, impacting the Cape, Titusville, Jacksonville, and possibly reach a Category 3 strength, weaken to a 3 by the time it gets up near Savannah, Hilton Head. But again, these barrier islands, it doesn't take much to submerge a lot of these barrier islands. So I think there's going to be a stretch of maybe 300 to 500 miles of a fairly extensive storm surge flooding from Matthew.
We've been keeping our eye, as I mentioned earlier, on both what became a superstorm Chaba in the Pacific, Matthew in the Atlantic, and in both cases, you mentioned the unusual path along the coast. But I believe that Matthew was the farthest south Category 5 storm on record to form in the Atlantic. Chaba also had a very unusual path. You mentioned the difference, the warming water, the effect that has on the strength. But are we seeing different weather patterns now than we have in the past? And if so, what would explain that?
The answer is yes. It's not your grandfather's weather. There have been changes, and it was the increasingly freakish weather that tipped me off back in the late 90s, early 2000s, that something was going on, which pulled me into the science, Brad, and made me realize that climate theory was already a meteorological reality, that this wasn't something distant way off in the future, that it's already happening. A couple of years back, we had our first hurricane in the southern hemisphere off the coast of Brazil, which has never been reported because the waters are usually too chilly. But in this case, the waters were warm enough to support a hurricane in the southern hemisphere. So, again, you warm things up, you increase the amount of water vapor, the amount of fuel available for flash flooding. The United States has seen five separate thousand-year floods in just the last year, including the storm that hit Louisiana around Baton Rouge, extreme flooding, 30 inches of rain from a storm with no name. And, you know, whether it's Maryland or West Virginia or Texas or South Carolina, and that's the thing about climate change. It doesn't hit home until it hits home. And it's hitting home with greater frequency and ferocity, which begs the question, how many times do you have to be clubbed over the head before you pay attention and start to connect the dots? And I think increasingly many Americans are connecting the dots and realizing that something is going on, and the most likely explanation is the fact that it's warmer.
Well, speaking of being clubbed over the head, I'll just put out this trigger warning. I'm about to play Rush Limbaugh in a second because I want to get your comment on that and talk about your book and how all of this plays in together. But before I turn to that, let me one more question on Matthew here. Maybe this is a crazy question. I'm not a meteorologist, so I don't know how this should work, but I'm looking at the predicted path right now for or the projected path for Matthew. It looks very unusual, at least to my layman's eyes, in that it is predicted to go up the eastern seaboard, as we've discussed, through the Carolinas, but then veer out to the sea and actually back down to the south in what almost looks like a U-turn. Is that unusual as well? And could that mean it reforms again and comes back into the U.S. and slams Florida again?
Yeah, it's a little like Chucky and Halloween, right? I mean, it just keeps coming back and back. Yeah, a number of the computer models, including the European and some of the U.S. models, indicate that Matthew may make a big loop, a big U-turn.
Yeah.
Normally, these things sweep out to sea, but there's a giant blocking pattern. And we're seeing more of these blocking patterns, Brad, where weather patterns slow down or stall. And when the weather stalls, bad things happen. A similar blocking pattern steered Sandy into New Jersey in late October. That storm should have swept out to sea, and 20, 30, 50 years ago would have. But because we had unusually warm conditions over Greenland, we had a giant blocking high, a big roadblock, which pushed that storm inland in late October, which, you know, really is unprecedented. So we're seeing more of these blocking patterns where weather stalls for extended periods of time. And when that happens, you increase the chance of prolonged biblical rains or much more severe drought. So that does seem to be another symptom of warming and changes in the jet stream that we're observing.
Have we ever seen something like that, a hurricane down in Florida, actually hitting Florida, going out to sea, and then coming back again?
I can't remember a similar situation. I know there have been two hurricanes in the last 150 years that have taken a path similar to the one projected for Matthew, but neither of those two were anywhere near as strong as this storm. So, I don't want to overstate it, but this could be unprecedented in terms of the track, the intensity, the amount of real estate that's impacted by this storm surge, and the fact that it's taking this bizarre loop potentially. So we're going to have to watch it. But it's conceivable that the Bahamas, which got ripped up today by a 10 to 15 foot storm surge, could certainly experience at least tropical storm conditions as Matthew comes back for a second swipe sometime next week.
Wow. Wow, that's just kind of amazing. And this is kind of what I feared from this storm over the past week as it was developing. Paul, I'm speaking with Paul Douglas, Minnesota broadcast meteorologist. Paul, last time we spoke, I know, and I want to get to your book on because it's all related here, but I think you said, were you a Republican or a conservative? How do you currently identify yourself in that regard?
I'm a Ronald Reagan, Teddy Roosevelt conservative. I'm a conservative who believes that conservatives should actually conserve, and that this applies to our economy, and it applies to our environment. So, yeah, I'm
okay.
I voted for the GOP candidate my entire life. That said, I have trouble voting for climate deniers, because if you deny climate change, if you deny science, what else are you going to deny?
Well, here's what else they're going to deny, because I know that you've been trying to reach out to your fellow conservatives on the issue of global warming and climate change with your book with Reverend Mitch Hescox, who's an evangelical. We've had him on the show as well. But there are climate skeptics, and I'm being really nice by using that word because I'm trying to be polite here for a change. But in this case, Rush Limbaugh, who is still reaching and misinforming millions of Americans even today, these so-called skeptics suggest that there's been a dearth of hurricanes coming ashore in the U.S. in recent years, and that is evidence that global warming isn't happening, or it's a hoax, or whatever they'd like to pretend. Let me play this clip, Paul, from Limbaugh just yesterday, and then I want to get your thoughts on it. Again, trigger warning to those who can't stand listening to Rush.
I have perfected being able to analyze how hurricanes are reported. I've become an expert in spotting the politics in hurricane tracking and hurricane forecasting. And by that, I mean the people that work at the National Hurricane Center is part of the National Weather Service, which is part of the Commerce Department, which is part of the Obama administration, which by definition has been tainted, just like the DOJ has. So in hurricane tracking and hurricane forecasting, I've been able to spot where I think they might be playing games, because it's in the interests of the left to have destructive hurricanes, because then they can blame it on climate change, which they can desperately continue try to sell. The problem for them is, after Hurricane Katrina, remember Al Gore goes out there and all these people start saying, this is just the beginning, and this is just the tip of the iceberg. We're going to have these kind of hurricanes every year, numerous hurricanes, and they're going to be more destructive than Katrina. And it's all because we've got climate change. And then what happened? We had 11 years of no hurricanes. 11 straight years, no major hurricanes striking land in the United States, which just bores a hole right through the whole climate change argument.
Okay, Paul, because you are or were a Ronald Reagan Republican, I'm going to hold you personally accountable for everything Rush Limbaugh just said there. Your 11 years of no hurricanes, your response to that and to the National Weather Service being tainted by Obama from Rush Limbaugh. I guess Sandy doesn't count in those 11 years, by the way. In any event, that all means there's no climate change. Paul Douglas, you have the floor.
Well, I don't know what to say. I'm at a rare loss for words, but I don't ascribe to the conspiracy theories, this notion that thousands of PhD scientists and their staffs have been hoodwinked and they're cooking the books, and NOAA and NASA, every scientific organization on the planet, is somehow in on this and in cahoots with President Obama's administration to grow government. I'm like, really? Our government can't even launch a website. So, I just don't buy it. Now, we've been lucky. We've been relatively lucky. We have had major hurricanes in the Atlantic. It's just that none of it in the U.S.
Right.
So somehow, the denialists, the professional denialists say, well, if they don't hit the U.S., it's like the bear in the woods, right?
Yes.
I don't know. I mean, I
know where you're going there.
We've had a long list of extreme hurricanes and typhoons in the Pacific. We've been lucky in the Atlantic for the last decade
mm-hmm.
that the big hurricanes that have formed have not hit the United States. But that doesn't mean we haven't had hurricanes. It just means that we've been lucky with the tracks of these hurricanes.
Right.
So, I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, when the science isn't in their favor, a lot of people resort to conspiracy theories, you know, the flat earthers. And you can believe what you want to believe. I don't really care what you believe. The atmosphere doesn't care what you believe. The atmosphere responds to physics and chemistry. Mm-hmm. And we've been fiddling with the chemistry of the atmosphere. We've been poking at the climate system with a long, sharp, carbon-tipped spike and then acting surprised when the weather bites back. I don't know what Rush would say to the people displaced by extreme flooding in West Virginia or Ellicott City, Maryland, or South Carolina or Texas. And it's going to become harder to dismiss and deny and just wave away with a magic wand.
Mm.
And, you know, shame on the people that have politicized science. You know, let's debate policy. Let's not debate evidence and science and facts. And right now there's a preponderance of evidence that something is going on. The most likely culprit is the increase in CO2, going from 280 to mm-hmm. 400 parts per million, higher than it's been possibly in 3 million years. And it is starting to show up.
Well,
you know, is climate change creating hurricanes that wouldn't have been there otherwise? No. But it's supersizing the storms that would have formed anyway. It's making the storms more extreme. The extremes are trending more extreme.
Well, let me,
and that's going to become more obvious in the years to come.
I would like to talk about those policies, but, you know, the problem here is, Paul, Limbaugh's rhetoric, you know, dismissing or marginalizing climate science or calling it a hoax, that seems to win the day because every 4 years, we go through these cycles of presidential debates, it seems like, and the mainstream corporate media, not the crazy right-wing media, not Rush, not Fox News, but the real media still refuse to raise the topic of climate change, of global warming, of the policies you're talking about in any of these presidential debates. We saw this again over the past week with the vice presidential debate. That, despite the broad differences between Republicans and Democratic candidates that you would think they would want to bring out, because it seems like it's rife for discussion, for debate in one of these settings, yet we don't see it. Now, I would think that that would be at least as important as the, you know, from a national security perspective as the terrorism that they're always talking about. You know, the ability for mankind to survive on this planet. You've spent years in the corporate media, Paul. What explains the reticence from, you know, all of these moderators to simply ask any question at all in the presidential debate about climate change and global warming?
Well, I think they're responding to some of the polls that show that climate change is not top of mind for most Americans. It's somewhere down the list. And I think it's also a symptom of disruption in the traditional media. You know, you don't want to do anything that's going to piss off 20% of your audience. You want that 20%. And if you just utter the words climate change, some of the people that are still in denial are going to turn away, turn it off, tune out. So you don't want to antagonize any of your audience. You want the biggest audience. You want the greatest ratings possible. So, you know, it's hard speaking truth to power, and maybe you lose ratings. Maybe you're not as popular, but your kids and your grandkids will thank you for it.
Yeah, well, I expect you don't want to tell your viewers and your listeners and your readers that it's going to rain and it's going to be a terrible day tomorrow. That, you know, doesn't help readership. But you tell them anyway because it's your job to inform the electorate. You know, so I've never accepted this reason that, oh, it's not a topic for discussion. It's not a popular topic. So, you know, CNN shouldn't raise it. But that's what seems to happen. Paul Douglas, I've got just a minute or two left here, but I do want to get into your new book, Caring for Creation, The Evangelical's Guide to Climate Change and a Healthy Environment. But wait, Paul, I thought that the evangelicals, I thought they were with Donald Trump this year. He believes climate change is a hoax invented by the Chinese to make money or something. So what do you mean the evangelical's guide to climate change and a healthy environment?
Well, I think there's still a lot of evangelicals and conservatives that are keeping an open mind. I mean, we hear from some of the most vocal climate deniers, but I think there's a significant percentage of people who have a conservative worldview, especially younger people, younger voters, who don't have the baggage, who have their eyes wide open and see what's going on. But we're trying to frame this in a way that appeals to their worldview and that resonates with their worldview, talking about stewardship, talking about creation care, and framing this as an economic opportunity. I think a lot of people, when they think climate change, oh, the only possible solution, more government, more regulation, EPA times 10, you know, how else will we solve this problem, when in fact it won't be a bureaucrat in Washington. It will be thousands of new companies, similar to Tesla, springing up around the country, innovating, disrupting, and giving us all the energy we need for less money, even less money than fossil fuels, and fewer side effects, fewer unpleasant symptoms, more resilience, smaller grids, you know, breaking up the utility monopolies. You know, don't tell me I can't put solar panels on my roof or my church or my business and take advantage of the free energy that's out there. And, you know, the fossil fuel industry doesn't want to be disrupted. No industry wants to be disrupted. And so they're pushing back, and they're pushing this competing narrative that, oh, climate change, it's not real. If it is real, it won't be bad, and we'll figure it out. And we will figure it out. I'm more convinced of that than ever. But the solutions will come, I think, from the markets. Decarbonization is not going to come about through politics, at least not in the short term. It will be, we're going to see solutions that come about and less carbon based on economics and based on energy security. The fact that there are a lot of reasons why we want energy freedom, we want energy choice, and we want cleaner communities, healthier communities. One in three kids today, Brad, affected by severe allergies, asthma, autism, or ADHD. One in three. And I think we can all agree that, you know, fewer chemicals, fewer petrochemicals in the environment, probably a good thing. We can clean things up. Twice as many people die prematurely from air pollution than traffic accidents today. So, you know, we can clean up our communities in the short term and address the climate challenge in the long term and create the new technologies that we can export to the rest of the world. And, you know, in the United States, we're going to be in pretty good shape, I think, because we're a rich nation. We'll figure it out. We can adapt. And the rest of the world, the third world, I mean, you think it's a mess now.
Yeah.
Give it a few years.
Yeah. That's,
you know, clean water, the migrations that we see now in Europe and the Mediterranean, I think we're just getting a taste of what may happen as things continue to warm up. So the military, many within the military, take the threat seriously. And I still think that I'm optimistic for two reasons. Number one, kids today don't have the same sense of cynicism that their parents or grandparents had. They see what's happening. And number two, the arc of technology, the price of fossil fuels, you know, volatility with fossil fuels, the fact that we have to be police cop for the entire planet, policing the oil supply chains, But you look at the price of renewables, solar, wind, mm-hmm. dropping even faster, and you take away all subsidies, and renewable energy is cheaper in many cases than even natural gas. So things are moving in the right direction, but we need to move faster.
We do indeed. And on that note, I got to move faster and get out here. That is Paul Douglas, conservative, and Ronald Reagan, Republican, calling for action on climate change. He is the author of the new book with Reverend Mitch Hescox, Caring for Creation, The Evangelical's Guide to Climate Change and a Healthy Environment. And of course, he is also a Minnesota broadcast meteorologist, and I hope a more frequent guest on this program. Paul, good luck with that book. Good luck with getting that message out to those conservatives, those evangelicals who really do need to hear it. Always great to talk to you, my friend. And boy, fingers crossed for the folks down on the Eastern Seaboard this week.
Yeah, I feel like I'm swimming upstream with a message, but at some point the wind will be at our back. And, say a prayer for the folks in Florida and all across the Southeast Coast. It's going to be a very rough couple of days.
And I'm right there in that stream with you in the meantime, Paul. Paul Douglas, thank you very much. Check him out, his work at the Star Tribune, at pauldouglasweather.com, on the Twitters at pdouglasweather, and you can find more on his book. Get it for someone for Christmas, for your crazy right-wing uncle, caring... CaringForCreationBook.com. Thanks, Paul.
Thank you, Brad. Always a pleasure. Hang in there, buddy.
All right. Gonna try. Okay, we'll take a quick break. We're running long, and we'll be back with more Bradcast right after this. I'm Brad Friedman. Don't go away. Unless you're in Florida, in which case, go away. Go away. Back to the Bradcast, Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. I didn't even get to say hello to you, Desi Doyen, in the opening there. I wanted to get straight to Paul Douglas. Plus,
yes.
I didn't think you'd be interested in that particular
topic. It's just, it's weather, climate.
I know, you don't care about that stuff. Actually, in truth, we've got a Green News Report coming up in a little bit here with some really important stuff above and beyond Hurricane Matthew, but it all plays together. We like to connect the dots on this show, the climate dots on this show in particular, because so few others do. I think you had mentioned, Amy Goodman on our Pacifica Radio colleague there, Amy Goodman on Democracy Now.
Today. Yeah, she said she had been canvassing the cable media stations, the mm-hmm. network stations as well, and she said that there really were no climate scientists being talked to. There were the National Hurricane Center. She said CNN was asking them, so is there anything else you'd like to tell us about this? And she said there was no mention of climate change.
I guess I shouldn't be surprised.
No, I know.
I think we talked with Paul Douglas there about the lack of questions about this in the presidential debates. And, it happened again with the vice presidential debate. We'll discuss that in the Green News Report. But I think it'll come up this Sunday in the debate. Just to predict, that is if the debate actually happens at this point. This could be just epic, terrible, this storm.
Yes, it's very possible, and I would not be surprised at all, I am sad to say, if it doesn't come up at all in the next presidential debate.
Even with all that's going on.
At this point, I am so cynical, I don't believe that it will.
You are cynical.
Yeah.
I don't know how it could not, given what's going on, but maybe I'm wrong. Trump has a history, as TPM notes today, a history of politicizing election season hurricanes, going back to 2012, as Hurricane Sandy was slamming into the Northeast. This was just before the 2012 presidential election, back in late October of 2012. And Trump tweeted, yes, he was tweeting at the time like crazy, that he was going to use that hurricane, that Barack Obama was going to use the hurricane to, quote, buy the election. Against Mitt Romney. He said, Hurricane is good luck for Obama again. He will buy the election by handing out billions of dollars. He said that just days, about 4 days before the November election back in 2012. And then he continued with these tweets for days thereafter, before the election, as Chris Christie and Barack Obama were actually working together down there during this horrible superstorm Sandy. Trump said, I'm concerned about the hurricane and that people will vote for Obama because he's bravely standing in water. Don't fall for it. Our country is at stake. Next day, he went on to say, do you believe Al Gore is blaming global warming for the hurricane? Where would Al Gore get that crazy idea?
Gosh, I don't know. Scientists, maybe?
That was a record. That Superstorm Sandy was a record amount of rainfall back in 2012.
Yeah, and it was also geographically a record. It was one of the physically largest storms, 1,000 miles across,
yes,
if I remember correctly.
So can you believe Al Gore was doing that? Trump went on to tweet, with long gas lines and total disarray from storm, the hurricane may yet be a negative for Obama. So he changed his mind within just the same day. It was going to be a great thing for Obama. Then it was going to be a negative. He said, interestingly, the hurricane may now be a disaster for Obama's reelection because of his grandstanding, whatever that grandstanding was at the time. He went on to tweet, could be the hurricane helps Mitt Romney. People are rioting in the streets over gasoline.
That must be like those Muslims that he saw that were cheering 9/11.
Yeah. Remember those famous gasoline riots of Hurricane Sandy? Who can ever? They're still, we will rebuild.
just want to say that the fact that he complains and calls it grandstanding, or that Obama's trying to buy the election, what he's talking about is disaster recovery funding, emergency funding. So it's like, you get hit six ways to Sunday, because either you get slammed for not helping people,
right,
or you get slammed for helping
people.
Which,
by the way, he also slammed Obama for not helping people,
right,
just days before, in October, the same month, days before, a couple of weeks before. He said, after Obama's 2007 racist speech on Katrina relief, I don't recall that racist speech, but I'm glad Donald Trump is worried about racism in America. In any event, after Obama's 07 racist speech on Katrina, he now won't provide any aid to victims of Hurricane Isaac.
Oh, that's ridiculous.
Remember that?
Yes.
So, I mean, you're right. So he's trying to have it both ways. He's slamming him for giving away federal funds. He's slamming him for not giving away federal funds. That's so unusual for
Trump to be opportunistic.
Optimistic.
No, say opportunistic.
Yes, you're right. Thank you. To be saying one thing in one way and another thing. So far, he's actually been well behaved. I don't suspect this will last. But he has tweeted in regard to Hurricane Matthew, one tweet only. He said, praying for everyone in Florida, hoping the hurricane dissipates. But in any event, please be careful.
Well, maybe somebody took away his phone.
That doesn't sound like a Trump tweet, does it?
It doesn't.
Sounds like somebody else. Speaking of Trump and hurricanes and global warming and reasons you should be concerned, our friend Steve Horn over at DeSmog Blog notes that Washington Post is reporting Mike Catanzaro, a former senior energy staffer for Republican Party House Majority Leader John Boehner, with a track record of climate change denial, will lead the Republican Party presidential candidate Donald Trump's energy transition team. Catanzaro now works as a partner at the lobbying firm CGCN, where his clients include Noble Energy, Koch Industries, Ensana and Kana, I don't know how you say that.
Ensana.
Ensana Oil and Gas, Halliburton, Devon Energy, and others. For those clients, he lobbies on issues such as pushing for more drilling on public lands, against emissions regulations for drilling onshore and offshore wells on public lands for Hess Corporation and Devon, and for offshore drilling in Israel on behalf of Noble Energy. So he's essentially, he's a Koch Industries lobbyist. He's going to head up Donald Trump's energy transition team. Sounds familiar.
Yes.
So, you know, think about that as you're watching this storm over the next few days coming in. Think about Donald Trump and how he deals with energy and regulation. He has said he wants to do away with all of these job-killing regulations by the EPA that are trying to do something about what you heard Ronald Reagan Republican Paul Douglas just talk about.
Yeah, these are matters of public health and safety. And so what he's talking about is, you know, I like the idea of clean water and clean air. I just don't think industry should have to do anything about it. You know, and that is that, that sort of that free market libertarian concept, mm-hmm. that you have to wait until after the damage is done and then you get to sue. So you have to wait till your dad dies from poisoned water. Then you can sue the company. And that's the free market at work.
The Smog blog is also reporting that Kathleen Hartnett White, the climate change denying former aide to First Lady Nancy Reagan and chairwoman of the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality. Oh, that commission.
Oh, gosh.
This under Republican Governor Rick Perry. Apparently, Hartnett White is now under consideration to head the U.S. EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency, if Trump assumes the White House. DeSmog has reported that Trump's prospective Secretary of Energy, hydraulic fracturing Baron Harold Hamm, founder and CEO of Continental Resources, stands to gain economically from the building of TransCanada's Keystone XL pipeline and the energy transfer partner's Dakota Access Pipeline up in North Dakota. So make him Secretary of Energy. He stands to make a whole bunch of money if he approves the Keystone XL pipeline and all of these other pipelines. The transition team is a Koch industry guy. Man, what could possibly go wrong? Okay, very quick before we get to a break here. We were talking a few days ago about how this Republican Party is just being torn apart through this election. Well, now Fox News itself is being seemingly torn apart. Roger Ailes is gone after the sexual harassment allegations against him. He's now working, of course, with Trump. But two of the Fox News channel's biggest stars have turned their sharp tongues on one another, according to the BBC. This after Sean Hannity accused Megyn Kelly of being in league with Hillary Clinton. Oh, brother. This clash began when Kelly said Wednesday that that both Mrs. Clinton and Donald Trump avoid tough media interviews. She said the Republican nominee Donald Trump will go on Hannity and pretty much only on Hannity. And of course, Hannity, who is a huge supporter of Donald Trump's, has actually appeared in his videos, his campaign ads. He fired back on Twitter, writing, "You should be mad at Hillary Clinton. Clearly, you support her." This to Megyn Kelly. And real Donald Trump did talk to you. Months ago, they talked. Another Twitter user chided Hannity, urging him to stand by his colleagues. But the host replied, "Sure, when they stand by me."
Thin-skinned much?
That kind of thing would not have happened if Roger Ailes was still in charge at Fox News. Just wait till the day after the election, and we'll see what happens. All right, a quick break, and we're back with more Bradcast, the Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman. Don't go away. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com, a very green Bradcast today, Desi Doyen.
I know.
Very green.
I can barely stand it.
Yes, I know. Well, very green and very wet. Let's get to it. A lot to cover in our latest Green News Report.
Being safe in the world, not only with a strong military, but also strong alliances to battle terrorism and climate change.
If you blinked, you missed it. Climate change shut out again at the vice presidential debate.
All revenues generated under this system will stay in the province or territory where they are generated.
Canada to establish a national carbon tax. New study warns the world is rapidly using up its carbon budget. Plus,
today's a historic day in the fight to protect our planet for future generations.
Global Paris Agreement surges over the finish line before the U.S. presidential election.
And not a moment too soon. All of those stories and more straight ahead. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
Ending the war on coal, a war on coal, and the war on coal. More of the same war on coal, and the war on coal.
If you keep saying it enough, Mike Pence, it might be true. Just like all your other lies. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, as another major hurricane, Hurricane Matthew, bears down on the U.S., we're reminded again how important all of the other issues we're covering on today's Green News Report actually are.
Yes, Hurricane Matthew is churning its way toward the U.S. after killing at least 108 people overall in the Caribbean. In the United States, states of emergency and evacuations are underway in Florida, Georgia, North Carolina, and South Carolina as Matthew heads up the eastern seaboard. It's forecast to bring torrential rain and dangerous storm surge, so stay safe out there. Meanwhile, another shutout for climate change in the one and only vice presidential debate of the 2016 election held at Longwood University in Virginia on Tuesday. CBS moderator Elaine Quijano had lots of questions about foreign policy and national security for the Democratic vice presidential candidate, Virginia Senator Tim Kaine, and the Republican vice presidential nominee, Indiana Governor Mike Pence, but nothing on the U.S. military's warning that climate change is a threat to national security or the fact that Americans are much more likely to be killed by climate change impacts than by domestic terrorism. Mm. This despite the stark differences between the nominees. Kaine accepts climate science. Pence is a climate change denier. But, however, there was a bit of talk on energy.
Ending the war on coal, it is hurting jobs and hurting this economy, even here in Virginia. More regulation, a war on coal, and the war on coal. More regulation, more of the same war on coal, and the war on coal.
We invest in manufacturing infrastructure and research in the clean energy jobs of tomorrow.
And that was it.
That was it. Guess it doesn't matter. Look out for those terrorists.
Meanwhile, some good news for the planet.
Today, the world meets the moment.
That was President Obama on Wednesday announcing that the European Union has collectively ratified the historic United Nations Paris Climate Agreement, the international accord to cut global emissions that cause dangerous global warming. That vote pushes the accord over the final threshold requirement of ratification by 55 countries representing at least 55% of global emissions. The Paris Agreement now goes into effect 30 days after ratification at the next UN Climate Summit in Morocco on November 7th. That's one day before the U.S. presidential election. The speedy ratification in just 10 months reflects international fear of a Donald Trump presidency. So now, no country can withdraw from the agreement for 4 years, but a Trump presidency could undermine and sabotage it. So it isn't exactly Trump-proof, but it is Trump and Republican resistant. President Obama acknowledged that the Paris Agreement is not enough.
The Paris Agreement alone will not solve the climate crisis. Even if we meet every target embodied in the agreement, we'll only get to part of where we need to go. But make no mistake, this agreement will help delay or avoid some of the worst consequences of climate change.
Obama also said it will help send a signal that this is where the world is going, and that will help unleash innovation. More good news. Canada's Prime Minister Justin Trudeau announced a nationwide carbon tax this week.
The government proposes that the price on carbon pollution should start at a minimum of $10 per ton in 2018. All revenues generated under this system will stay in the province or territory where they are generated.
Canada's provinces can either join up or create their own cap-and-trade emissions systems. Oil-producing provinces are not happy.
Oh well, life happens.
Finally, these big climate policy changes are helpful, but a new study warns the world is rapidly using up what's left of the carbon budget. That's the amount of carbon dioxide that scientists estimate can be emitted without overshooting the target in the Paris Agreement of keeping global temperatures from rising more than 2 degrees Celsius above pre-industrial times. Impacts are projected to be severe even with the 2 degrees Celsius limit, but above 2 degrees is said to be, as the World Bank puts it, quote, incompatible with human civilization.
And here you had all that good news. You had to go and ruin it at the end. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us, follow us, and spread the word via Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report. Yeah, we are. Thank you, Des. You know, I think you sort of buried the lead there. Actually, all of those stories were lead stories today. But one of them, we kind of flew past it there, but this carbon tax that Justin Trudeau came out with and announced for the entire nation of Canada, that's a pretty huge story.
Yeah, that's a really big deal. There's a lot more detail at our post for the Green News Report. And one of the things I thought was interesting, it's a bit of a contradiction, a very big contradiction, actually. Justin Trudeau's administration also approved a massive liquid natural gas project for the British Columbia coast. And that's very contradictory to a carbon tax.
Well, yes and no. In one sense, the theory being with the carbon tax is that now polluters will have to pay for the pollution. So this will somewhat limit, will it not, the amount of carbon, the amount of liquid natural gas that is pushed through these things?
Well, that's
in
a great
theory?
Point. That's a great point. In theory and in practice, you're welcome. It should actually make that natural gas more expensive. So
in theory, it ramps everything down. That's the theory. But as long as you think I made a great point, then I'm going to get the hell out. My thanks to our producer, Desi Doyen. To my guest today, Paul Douglas of the Star Tribune and PaulDouglasWeather.com. Love that guy. And my thanks to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's program, you can download it as ever for free at BradBlog.com. Though my great thanks to those of you who do stop by bradblog.com/donate to help us stay on the air and continue to do what we do ad-free and without some of those commercial pressures that that Paul Douglas was talking about a little bit earlier. Thanks also to those of you who have sent in complimentary notes and cards along with those donations. Thank you. You can drop me email. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. You can find me on the Facebooks and the Twitters at TheBradBlog. And you can find me right here in our next thrilling episode of The Bradcast. Until then, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, Florida, Georgia, North Carolina, South Carolina. Good luck, world.